Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? I hope you are having a good week so far. So, podcast time. And this week we have Ariel Bourgeois. I probably messed up his name. Ariel Bourgeois. I'm sorry, dude. Anyway, Ariel is a good friend of mine. I've known him for a couple of years now. Met him through Justin Martin. He is a mix engineer, producer, Grammy winner, Grammy nominated, done some insane stuff over the years. His first job was with Puffy in his studios in the 90s and has mixed some incredible artists over the years. I love this guy. It's a great conversation. So without further ado, Ariel Bourgeois.
You doing it on Logic?
No, so I have a, I have this Rode, it's called the Rode Podcaster.
Oh.
It's really good, man.
Oh, dope. Yeah, okay. So it comes with everything you need. You got the whole...
Got everything, yeah. I can multi-channel into Logic if I want.
Oh, it's fucking dope.
Which
right,
is great.
Then you could tweak it and whatever.
But I never do, really.
Well, I require an eighth note delay and a plate on my vocal.
Everyone that's just listening right now has just been like, what the fuck did he just say? And welcome, people. This is going to be this is the start of this conversation. It's going to be very much like this, I have a feeling. How's it going, dude?
Man, I'm great, man. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Last time I saw you was at Matt's wedding.
That's right, man. That was like, I think that was like the last big gathering I was at, believe it or not.
Yeah. That was nearly a year and a half ago.
Yeah. That was so much fun. That was like, that was the first time I felt the Texas heat wave, man. That was like a hot, hot weekend.
That was hot. And I don't think that is actually hot, that hot.
No, everybody was looking at me like we left our, we were staying downtown in a friend's apartment and, I remember just walking out, and the minute I walked out, it was like I just felt my skin just completely change. I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to melt.
And now they're all crazy going down there because they've like don't have power for like 3 days.
Man, I've been
snowing
up since 6 a.m. reading about this, and it's so crazy. Hello?
Yo, there we go. We're back.
Oh, it was the internet.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. Just froze.
It could. I mean, it is snowing here. So
it could be that.
Yeah, we're getting dumped on like another 12 inches on what we already have.
Yeah, I was talking to a mate from that lives in Dallas on Instagram last night, and they were moaning that they've run out of firewood and they've not had power for days. And I was like, that's just normal in Detroit. Like,
yeah,
get used to it.
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah. That, I mean, that's like, oh, you guys get it like crazy up in Detroit, man. It's like,
so do you guys. We get about the same weather as you. It just gets a little bit colder.
You get it more with the further north in New York. Like you guys are probably comparable to like Buffalo or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, because you guys are near the lakes, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So Buffalo gets it rough, man. We don't have as much wind as you in New York City. Like, it's nowhere near as windy in Detroit than it is in New York City at all.
Oh, New York City, man. If you walk, like, I remember I lived off of Fifth Avenue, and the minute you got onto Fifth Avenue, like, I was up in Harlem, like, literally the wind would push you on a windy day. It was like, woo.
Yeah, that's down those Avs is just brutal. Just kills you.
I miss the city.
Yeah, man, so do I. How is it? How is New York at the moment?
I mean, you know, I've done a couple trips by myself into the city. I'm about 45 minutes north.
Yeah.
So I still dabble here and there, but I don't go. I mean, I haven't been on a subway since last year.
Why did I think you were in Brooklyn?
Nah, I used to. I had a studio. I had a studio in Brooklyn. In Greenpoint.
Oh, that was it. Because we went to Paulie G's and you were talking about... Yeah.
Oh, my God. Paulie G's is the spot. Shout out to Justin Martin for... Well, actually, I got Justin into Paulie G's because we were working together and he was like, you know, he starts telling me about his like pizza fetish. And I was like, okay. I was like, yo, I got the spot to go to. So I remember the first night we went, I think he was in town for like, I don't know, like 5 or 6 days. I think we went like 3 days to Paulie G's. And after the third day, I was like, bro, like, I can't wake up the way I do. It was so crazy. But and then every time he comes to town, that's how we ended up going. We finally met at Paulie G's, man. That's like a DJ engineer first date spot over there.
I think that Justin has kind of curated that as well. I didn't know it was you that introduced him to it.
Oh, yeah. Because he kept telling me, like, there's a place in Connecticut where he's from, and he was telling me how his pops makes pizza. And I was like, bro, I'm like, this guy is so legit. And then I said to him, I was like, yo, he's like, make a reservation. I was like, I can't, you just got to go there and, like, you know, hopefully you get a table. And he's like, you know, we get there and it was mobbed. And I said, bro, watch, this guy's going to be here. The owner, Paulie G himself, Paulie G goes to every single table and speaks to everybody. It is like the most unbelievable thing, man.
He's a G. I was watching a documentary on him.
What?
Yeah. There's like a Munchies, like chef's night out with him.
Oh my God, I gotta watch it.
Dude is amazing. And he was like a banker or like an investment banker in Wall Street and like in the stock exchange. And he hated it. But he did it till he was like in his like mid 50s and then was like, stuff it. And then he built a pizza oven in his backyard in his nearly 60 years old, and that's when he opened Paulie G's.
Yeah, because he's old, man. And this guy goes to every single table.
Have you been to his slice shop?
His what?
He's got a slice shop.
No, you know, I walked by it one day, man. I don't know. I can't, man. I got to have that fresh. For Paulie G, you got to have the fresh pie. There's no, I mean, I'm sure if you're coming out of a bar, it's way better than anything else. So I'll probably give him that, you know? But he's got this one pie, man, the Hellboy. That's the one we ate, which was like, oh, my God.
Hot honey. Spicy honey.
With the honey, spicy honey and the soprasat, man. That shit was like, remember that? Everybody got their own pie, and then there was more pies coming. And I was like, oh, my God. I'm like, every time we come out, man, Justin just starts
ordering. Justin with us that night?
Yeah, he was.
Is that where we met?
Yes.
I think it was.
That's why I said it's an engineer, DJ producer's first date spot.
It is, isn't it?
Very famous for that.
Oh, man. I do miss it so much. Every time I posted a photo on my Instagram last night of me playing a show in, it's the Hudson, isn't it? On the river.
Yeah.
And the Statue of Liberty was there. And I was just like, oh, I miss New York. I miss living there. I just miss everything, man.
I will tell you that it is by far, it's super different, man. Because I'm 44 and I moved to the city when I was 18.
What year was that?
Holy shit. 1996. August of 1996 is when I started recording school.
Yeah.
In the Village.
That's amazing.
That was definitely the best year of my life, man.
So was New York clearing up then? Was it clean then?
So no, Times Square was still Times Square, right? I gotta shut my screen. Damn, I forgot your. Hold on, do not disturb. I remember at the time I was living on 50. So there's a hotel that's like pretty fancy now. It's called the Hudson Hotel.
Yeah.
Which is on 57th between 8th and 9th on the corner of 9th, really, but the entrance is between.
It's like near Central Park, right?
Yeah, close, very close. Right next to the big where CNN and all that shit is, right there on Columbus Circle.
Yeah.
So there used to be this, like, so in that building back in the day, they called it student housing. And there was, like, old vaudeville, like, actors and actresses from like the 50s living there, like that, just like we're paying for these rooms. No joke, bro. Like my room, I'm not even making this up. So my studio is 9 by 12, right? 9 by 12, I'd say.
Feet, that is people.
That's how big these rooms were. But these people were living for like $250 a month, right? Oh, on damn. in this location. Now, if you went a block over to 10th Avenue in 1996, we used to go rollerblading, you know? We'd like drink 40s and, you know, ride around. And it was not, I mean, there was like, you know, there'd be prostitutes like a few blocks away. But it was just like the best year. So that year, I remember we're in the lobby. I'm with my parents and my buddy. And we see this actor that was really famous even in the 80s. His name was Nipsey Russell.
Okay.
Nipsey Russell was apparently, if you Google him, he was one of Bill Cosby's writers back in the day.
Okay.
Not only that, but Russell. He was in the big Broadway with Michael Jackson, The Wiz. He played the Scarecrow, I believe. He played in a movie with Goldie Hawn called Wildcats. Like he's real. Nipsey Russell.
Nipsey Russell, 1918 to 2005, was an American comedian, poet, dancer, best known for his appearance on the panelist game show 1960s to 1990s Match Game.
Rest in peace, Nipsey. I'm going to tell you a story about Nipsey. Nipsey was a, we saw him in the lobby and I recognized him. And I looked at my buddy Mark. I'm like, yo, Nipsey Russell lives here. And I was like, wouldn't it be funny if Nipsey Russell lived next door to us? So they gave us the top floor. It was, I mean, literally, we had no kitchen. We used to do the dishes in the bathtub. It was so we had a hot plate. Yo, dude bought his 7-foot black rat snake. We had like this huge snake in our room. It was with a view of New Jersey and the water. It was so dope. And you saw the sunset. It was crazy, amazing, man. We were slobs. So I would like throw my garbage out the window like when I was done eating. I was stupid. And sure enough, Nipsey Russell lived next door to us, Will. Like right
That's
next
wild.
Door. And he was just out of his mind, man. Like, I mean, I'm not gonna talk about the things that happened in there, but he wasn't too happy with us.
Yeah.
So my buddy was dating this girl who was studying abroad in Italy. So he went to visit her and I was alone. And he used to bang on the walls when we were like making too much noise. I would have like, you know, after school, I'd have all these MCs come to my house that I met from the city. And we would like just hang out and make music. I had a 4-track recorder with a drum machine and a guitar. I mean, it was like primitive. And this guy would just bang on the walls. And that one time that I was actually sleeping in my room, he starts banging on the wall at like midnight. I'm like, what does this guy want? And I start banging back. I'm like, shut the up, man. I'm like, I'm trying to sleep. Like I was flipping out. And I find out that I go and I start banging on his door. Finally, he wouldn't stop. And it wasn't even these girls come out. And on the other side of him, it was these girls that were throwing a party in their room. And this guy's like, I mean, he was just a wacky dude. But it was just a strange thing to, like, first time moving into New York City. And I got this guy living next door. And he was paying, I found out, $220-something a month.
That's so cheap.
And when he passed, like, they told me he had, like, milk crates and stuff as his furniture.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was deep, man. Like a bed and milk crates and a TV.
That's not good.
No, man. It was a weird place. Now it's the fanciest hotel. So yeah. I used to once a year, I'd meet this couple that would stay there and friends of mine. And when they were in the city, and I would always go and take a picture in front of the door with, like, the number. It was like room 2339. It was like 39th apartment, 23rd floor. And it was great, man. That first year in the city was, you know, Times Square, getting back to Times Square, I got my first job. My first real job was working for Puffy at his studio, which was on 44th between 8th and 9th. This was...
What year was this?
So it's weird. So I graduated. The school was only 9 months long. I wanted to go to NYU, but then I went to community college first because I totally messed up my last year of high school. Like, yeah. I don't even think I showed up sometimes, you know? And I was like, you know, I told my parents, I'm going to go to community school and this is what I want to do. For some reason, my dad had it in his head I was going to be an accountant or something, because I remember they'd have, like, job fairs and we'd look at accounting. I'm like, man, I, like, fail math all the time. And one year I went to summer school and I got a 98. My parents were so happy. They're like, why couldn't you do this during the year? I'm like, this is the only thing I'm focused on. You know, like, I don't know if I had ADD or something, but, you know, like, I was so just good. Focused on math. It was easy, you know? So I went to school. I decided I was going to go to community school, mm-hmm. then get transferred to NYU, and they had a program, a sound technology program, they called it. And I was like, all right, cool. You know? And I've always wanted to do sound since I was 8.
Yeah.
Like, I was fascinated. Like, remember those old stereos with the equalizers, the double cassettes, the 5-CD changer? My grandpa had one with, like, equalizer. And when I saw that and I started messing with it, I was like, holy crap. Like, I could make Barry Manilow sound brighter, you know? Like, so I ended up going to... I graduated from... I went to this recording school called the Institute of Audio Research, which was the first school, audio school in the country. It opened in 1969, okay. Apparently. A lot of guys came through there, like big engineers, like Chris Geringer, the mastering engineer, I believe, was mm-hmm. from there. I mean, it's just like it goes down the line. Like, you know, those old school New York guys, a lot of them went there. So I did 9 months. My first 2 weeks in, I got an internship. You know, my music style varies. Like, I mean, I'm a hip hop guy, like, by heart, but I love, you know, we talked about this, like, I'm a closet metalhead, man. Yeah. Like, I love heavy metal. I love Slayer. I love Metallica. But I'm also into jam bands. So I love, you know,
I don't get the jam band thing.
Bro, hold on a second. I'm going to tell you something. It wasn't a super wealthy area, but there was a lot of kids with money.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of those kids were, like, they would just leave for the summer and go follow the dead. And I didn't understand that concept because my parents were like, you're either going to do something productive or, you know, we didn't have money to go to camp. So I'd go to, like, a free day sports camp or something, but you're either going to do something or you're going to get a job and you're going to make money.
You know,
I mean, I started working cleaning my doctor's office, who was a family friend, on Saturday mornings for $5 an hour. I would just vacuum the joint, you know? Hold on a second. I'm losing my train of thought here, man, because I'm going deep right now.
You're going well deep. So we were talking about Puffy, how you started in Puffy and what year it was.
So it was the whole thing with the school. So I ended up I graduated. I ended up going back I moved home shortly because I got a job at a big jazz studio.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting the gig as a secretary because they didn't have an opening. I worked my way to become friends with the assistant. I became friends with the assistant. That was my first official gig, and it was close to home. And it was still to this day the most beautiful studio I've ever been to. It was in the woods, and the cat. It looked like it was a huge stone barn. It was crazy.
That's heaven.
I mean, sauna, pool, basketball court. It was nuts. It was residential. So I got fired like 7 months later.
Why? Right? Why did you get fired?
It's actually a stupid story. So at the time when you printed mixes, it would be on DAT tapes.
Yeah.
For the people who don't know what a DAT tape is, it's a digital audio tape. It was really the medium we used to print a lot on alongside half-inch reel-to-reel tape machine. So we would have to label the master copy in red and the safety copy in green. The green one, I forgot to put the last title on, and they fired me for it.
Ooh.
How deep is that? And I was good too, but I was still young. I couldn't even buy the client's beer. So I, the next day, I didn't tell my parents yet. The next day, I sent out like 40-something resumes, and the first one was Puffy.
No way.
It was Daddy's House Recording Studios. That's what it was called. And I get it. At the time, I had a pager, right? And I see this phone number, and I called her like, when can you come for an interview? And I'll never forget this. This was in August. I remember the heat.
Yeah.
And I went to like Banana Republic and bought like an interview outfit because I wear t-shirts and, you know, I'm a jeans and t-shirt guy. So I didn't even know. So I show up there for the interview, meet with this woman, who ended up still to this day is like a big influence. Her name was Felicia Newsom. She was my boss there.
Okay.
And she was like, okay. She's like, I'm going to have you interview with the head engineer here in about 4 hours. So come back then. And man, I stepped outside, bro. And this is how like not realizing how to dress properly. I just had a button down with no shirt on underneath. And man, I showed up at the studio sweating, man. Like it was so embarrassing, but I got the gig.
That's the main thing.
And I got to be honest with you. That took me. That experience turned me into, like, I went from like a boy to a man pretty quick in the music industry, just from, because you got to remember. And so this, going back to what year this was. So this was now this was 6 months after Biggie died.
Okay.
So I would say, what was that? 97, right? So
I don't know. I can fact check that.
Yeah, fact check that. I believe it was 97 because my first credit came out in 98, which would make sense.
Yeah, March the 9th, 1997.
Great. So this was August of 1997, so less. So everything was still real with that, proper. Right? So I got the job there. And they were like, you're going to be a GA, which was a general assistant. It was me and these two other kids. And I've had already assisted. So I knew how to hook things up. So one day, I'll never forget this. I'm in like the main area. And I all of a sudden the door opens and Heavy D pops his head out. And he was like, yo, anyone know how to hook up a microphone here or something like that? And I was like, yeah. And apparently the assistant didn't show up. He got sick.
Yeah.
So they were like, do you know how to do this? And I'm like, yeah. And I got put on. I mean, I'm used to doing jazz groups with like 40 microphones. Yeah. They're asking me to set up one microphone for a vocal. I mean, shit. So I'm like, I did it. And the rest is history. Like I was there for a while on and off. Like I even had left there. And they would still call me to come assist sessions because I knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I knew the rooms like the back of my hand. Mm. Like I knew the SSL console. Yeah. I knew the Neve console. I knew that both of their automations like inside and out. So I was useful to them and they knew it. And I gave a shit. because I was one of the only people that went through there that didn't want to become a producer or an artist. I like legit, you know, if Tony Maserati was there and I was assisting Tony, that shit was like school for me, man.
Yeah.
Like I sat there with like a pad and a pencil and I wrote notes, man. I still have all my notes in my closet, man, from like 96 with the sticker of Bad Boy Records on it, you know?
So cool, man. So what was your first credit? Let's explain what a credit is first.
So a credit is your recognition for working on the product.
And how does that get shown?
Or the art. So at the time, as an engineer, you always start as an intern and then as an assistant engineer. And when you work as an assistant engineer, that's usually the staff position at the studio. Mm-hmm. And the reason it's staff is because you get paid like shit, right? And your job is to make the room functional, good. And when things go wrong, you're able to deal with it without disrupting the session.
Mm-hmm.
That's the job, which means that there's hours of reading manuals because you needed to know the equipment. Yeah. So I would take the subway and use that time to read the manuals. And then the credit would read for me. My first credit was in 1998 and it was for the group Total, the R&B group. And it was on their second album. And my name was all over that as an assistant engineer.
That's amazing.
And I remember that how hard those first few months were at Puffy's, because this is what I was going to get to. And it leads to this. He was the biggest thing on the planet in hip hop at the time.
Yeah, he was huge.
So I got thrown into the cage at that point.
Yeah.
Right. And I definitely, had it rough in the beginning. Mm. Like I got tested a lot. You know what I
mean?
How so? You're dealing with egos. I'm really good at answering this. You're not going to get too much out of it.
I know you don't want too much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I, so the only way I can describe it, Puffy would never come during the day.
Yeah.
Puffy would deal with his business during the day. Mm-hmm. Puffy would usually come at night. After 9 o'clock, let's say. Yeah. I mean, when I say after nine, it could be like 9 o'clock. It could be 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. You're waiting. You don't know. And he would come to either approve a mix, listen to what this producer's doing in this room. There was three studios at the time. So during the day, though, when Puffy's not around, you are dealing with 13 Puff Daddies or more.
Yeah.
The minute Puffy comes, you're only dealing with one Puffy, and that Puffy doesn't really care too much for you in a sense, because he's dealing with the bigger fish in the room.
Yeah.
So it was a much different dynamic. So during the day was rough, man. People would ask you to do things like, there'd be like, I mean, I would say this, like, this is easy. So someone would walk in with like 15 dudes in an entourage, right? And all these dudes are on the couch. They're fucking, you know, they got the Henny popping. Yeah. They got their, you know, people are smoking blunts. Like, everyone's just chilling out, having a good time. And I'm helping the engineer and the producer, instead of asking one of his boys, like, yo, can you run out and grab me McDonald's? He would ask me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember, I was getting paid by the studio.
Yeah.
You know, I was like 21, 20 years old. I don't even remember. And I was like, I'm cool, you know, like I'll do whatever. And sometimes just to get out, I love New York City, man. Yeah. Just to be outside was great because this studio had no windows whatsoever. And I'd go out. And then after a while, one day my boss, Felicia, pulls me to the side and she's like, what are you doing? And I was like, well, such and such asked me to go to McDonald's. She's like, no, you're not going to McDonald's anymore. She's like, you go tell him that I told you that you're not going to McDonald's, and to have one of his lazy ass friends on the couch go get him McDonald's. I'm like, I'm not saying that, but you know, so that was it. And those like little things like that, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like just crazy things. So like, you know, you just got tested and I went from like being this like suburban kid who, you know, I had a good childhood. Like I had a great childhood, actually, you know, but then when you started dealing with the kids with money that are Following the Dead and shit like that. That's how I got into jam bands.
Yeah.
You know, it was, you went from being a suburban kid to being like in the middle of the roughest shit for a minute. And I don't mean with crime or anything. It was saw the music industry.
Yeah, of course.
Full blast.
Yeah, yeah.
Like something you should see 10 years down the road.
I always find it, because although what you do is a massive art in itself, but mixing down, before anyone, if people don't know who you are, you are a mix engineer, right?
Oh yeah,
right. We didn't get past that bit.
I ain't just your boy.
And there are egos in studios.
Oh God. That's most of the job, is you're dealing with egos. And that's not a negative thing, actually, all the time. You know, like, there's egos when people are assholes, and that ego. And then there's egos. And this isn't a bad thing. This, you learn, this is part of the art of being a good, not just a mixer, but just a good, you learn that stuff. I came up being in the room with producers, not the artists mostly.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the thing about Puffy, is he had a team of producers called the Hitmen. Mm-hmm. They were the guys making all the music, and I was just simply with them all the time. So it'd be like, this one needs to record. And then Pro Tools came out. We started adopting Pro Tools like before I even knew what to do.
Yeah.
So they'd be like, this one needs to get into Pro Tools. And I had to learn how to get audio into Pro Tools because nobody knew how to do it. Yeah. You know what I mean? And you're dealing with the ego of the most sensitive form of expression that this human being is giving. So there's a fine line that you're walking without overstepping and being like, I know more than you.
Yeah.
You know, because you can't be like that. You know, this is their art and you're just facilitating and helping them with their art.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because being a producer / engineer for me, when I'm in the studio with other people, and I know we spoke about this on the phone the other day, with Rick Rubin, talking about Rick Rubin and kind of just general producers, and I speak about it quite a lot with friends and also on the podcast here, is that like, it's producing or engineering or doing anything with real musicians, real artists that are just purely, and I'm not saying that being a producer, being an engineer isn't an artist, because it is, it's part of the art, but the actual performer side of it, so the singer, the instrument players, the rappers, whatever they are, I find that being the producer is such a key, you play such a big part in that session without anyone knowing, because you are literally the person that you're kind of the referee.
That's it's funny, because I learned that side of it from Puffy.
Yeah.
Puffy does not make beats. Everyone at the time, everyone was so concerned, like, he doesn't make beats. Mm. I'm like, but you know what he does? He has 8 producers to choose from. He knows the strengths of every single one. This one is stronger with the R&B, but his drums aren't aggressive. So if you get this guy to do the drums and this guy to do the music, you smack those two together. Now you get what I'm hearing in my head.
Yeah.
And Rick Rubin is kind of the same thing. He just orchestrates. That's what he's doing without really orchestrating.
Rick can write beats as well.
Well, we know that, obviously. To me, that's what he's doing now, currently. And I've been following, you know, I don't know if people here can see this, like my obsession with
it's the best t-shirt ever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I got a few. So like, it's Rick was really the reason I got into this, man. Like, I discovered in 1986 in my friend's backyard while we were like playing ball or something, someone played Run DMC and then Slayer.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is so cool. Both of them are aggressive forms of art.
Yeah.
What is this shit? And then I found out that some, you know, white Jewish kid from Long Island was doing it.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the f-? And then I learned about Russell Simmons, and I was like, these two guys are partners. I'm like, what? Def Jam. And that's how it all came. And learning from guys, like, I eventually would love to get into that side of it. I had a chance to do it in 2019 with a rock band. They're really like a Celtic rock. It's like a team of all-star musicians that created a group. I mean, they do like, you know, they play 65,000 people festivals and things like that, you know, in Europe. And they flew me out to France. I've always mixed their albums. And he was like, we want you to produce. And I'm like, great. And I show up at this massive studio in like this, where was it? It was southeast, right on the coast. So we got fresh oysters and stuff like that. And it was just like the wet, it was really, I've seen this process when I was an assistant. I was never a part of this type of process. I mean, I was a little bit, but this was like, we had a chef, we had this, and I got to really relax and do things where like, once everyone went to bed, I would grab the guitar player and be like, hey man, you want to knock out some guitars? Let's do some ideas. And I would do things like, he'd be like, okay, let me double that.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, with the same guitar and amp. And he'd be like, well, what do you suggest? I'm like, well, why don't we try the Les Paul running through like, you know, a Fender here to give it a little crunchier sound. And when you pan those, now the engineering part talks, mixing, when you pan those left and right, you'll get a sense that there's two different guitars, but it'll give it like a nice color. Mm. And he was like, oh, that's interesting. You know, let's do that. And, you know, it was cool. We would do like I was loving that. And eventually it would be great to move into that. And I made beats too back in the day. That's a whole,
because
like I was in the game.
Because I guess the thing is when you're doing producing and engineer, and you're like kind of bringing the engineer side of things in, you're actually kind of creating the sound for that artist as well.
Well, as an engineer, Will, you actually think about it. Mostly when you walk into a studio, there's an engineer. So you go there to record vocals, let's say, right?
Yeah.
So many vocal sessions. And all of a sudden you start asking the engineer, what do you hear?
Yeah.
Do you think I should double it? Yeah, why don't you double and add like a low harmony here, one, so it carries the pre-chorus a little bit. And then you start, next thing you know, you're producing. And I did that for like 15 years straight.
Yeah.
You know, I had like some, you know, at one point, New York, when hip hop was like hip hop here and I was getting off the Puffy thing, every underground and like known underground artist, I was working with them in just about everywhere in the city.
That's amazing, man.
Yeah, it was a good time.
I want to talk about Grammys.
Okay. I don't know how much I can talk about it, but you know, because they are a little bit hush, but yeah, let's go.
Oh, are they hush hush? I didn't know that.
A little bit, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I know that, like, I heard a story that Lil Wayne, like, posted a video of him drinking out of his Grammy and they stripped his Grammys.
Oh, really?
And then everybody was like, what? Like, it's his Grammy, though. Like, you know?
What, have you won Grammys or have you been nominated?
I've been nominated a lot.
Yeah.
And I won one weird Grammy that I didn't know I won. And
who is that for?
Actually, well, it actually fell into place the year that my son Noah was born.
Oh, amazing.
So why it was weird if he wasn't born, I kind of felt like this was like an omen. I worked on this project. So I used to be part of this collective in Manhattan, at a studio, and we had a room there that a lot of jazz guys like coming to, because it had like a big, it was actually, if for any jazz heads out there, this was Ornette Coleman's original studio.
Okay.
Who was one of the most famous saxophone players of all time.
Yeah.
And I worked on this project. This guy came in, I can't remember his name, but he produced a bunch of like children's albums.
Yeah.
And he got this famous singer from Colombia to come. I think her name was Marta Gomez was her name, and all these ridiculous jazz players. So I'm saying like, I got to set this up and I got to make it natural and headphones got to be right. I did this project for about a week. Track mixed, all that. Didn't think anything of it. And one day I get an email like, hey, did you ever get your Grammy? I'm not kidding you. So I had my, one of my boys was working at the Grammys at the time. So I hit him up. I'm like, yo, D, I'm like, I got this letter and they're claiming I won a Grammy. What is this? And they're like, what for? And it was Best Children's Album of the Year.
No way.
And that was the year my son was born. And it kind of like all fell. But what's funny is how left field it is, because all my nominations have come from hip hop.
Yeah.
You know, like all of them, like it was destined to be a hip hop Grammy. And it was this.
And it was but a it jazz would become children's a, album.
I just got used to like albums you work on being nominated and just losing. Like I just, but I never really looked at it. Like I'm not one of these people that like, my worth is not a Grammy. You know what I mean? Because Grammys, like, man, you could record an ad lib on a, on an, on a like album and be eligible for a Grammy.
Yeah.
You know, like if you, if that album wins, you win, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's the personnel, you know, that's working that recorded an ad lib, you know, a year earlier, get it. So, you know, but it was actually like, I just felt like, you know, I think I'm pretty I have some spiritual in me. So I was like, eh, mate. not religious, obviously. I mean, not obvious, but, but I'm definitely, I believe that happened for a reason. And then, you know, after that, I started getting, you know, more involved with the Grammys. They reached out and started getting more involved with me, because then, you know, you have a worth now.
Yeah.
And,
let's talk about that, because it's so strange. Like I wouldn't lie. Like I'd love to get a Grammy one day. I'd absolutely love to. The likelihood is very slim, but I'd absolutely love to. And, but it gives you, it does in this industry.
It's not slim, man, because they are like really trying to embrace the whole. And when I say electronic culture, I'm talking about like eventually subcategorizing like different genres. So there's going to be way more opportunity.
Hopefully one day. But I think the thing that I like about it is that it's so rare. It's so hard to get one.
It is.
And I think it, I think.
When you least expect it, you win.
Yeah, exactly. It's, that's life though, isn't it? When you, I find that when, for me, when I kind of get to the point where I don't care, and I don't think that's the right thing to say is like, I don't care, but it's like when I've held my hands up and being like, okay, it will happen when it happens, if it happens. And this is anything in my career. The minute I do that, something happens.
Of course, always, man, because it's, I live by always expect the unexpected.
Yeah.
That's my, I live by that. So it's, I could see why, but for me, like, I just know that it's, it doesn't defy me and that, you know, it doesn't defy me in any way. But I, getting back to what ended up happening, I ended up getting really involved with the Grammys, and currently they, I've been now for almost 2 years. So they have these chapters in the major cities called the producer and engineer wing.
Yeah.
And I'm actually the co-chair of the New York one,
oh, which no is, way.
You know, it's
know
a
that.
Big honor. So it's dope, you know, and I love it because there's all my peers and like, you know, it's nice to talk shop with people and it's just a lot of fun, man. I enjoy it. It's a good group of people. And, you know, when everyone's like, oh, New York is dead, I'm like, the fuck are you talking about, man? Unless Wall Street leaves, New York's not dead.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? You know, like there's still money here.
Of course.
But it's cool. You know, like, I mean, there's definitely like weirdness that people think about it. But like I always tell people, like, get involved with it. You know what I mean? Like get involved, because you know, it's, to me, that's power numbers. And then, you know, it's almost like politics. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. 100%. It is really the whole industry. The whole industry is that. How have you found it? Cause I know you work from home, or your studio is in your house.
Yeah.
How have you found it during coronavirus with like not actually being able to do sessions with people and things like that? Do you often do sessions with people?
That's a great question. No, I don't. I haven't done set. The last time was when I went to France.
Yeah.
And the time before that was 8 years earlier in a studio in Brooklyn recording a band. And I've been remote mixing now, even from.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The only two artists that came to the studio I can remember to mix was Justin Martin and Moon Boots. Those are the only two people that were in the studio with me. Otherwise, everything was remote from then. And that was the big decision to move out of the city and buy a place, because I just felt like the other side was that I was like commuting from Harlem to Brooklyn. And my kid was just born, and I would just get to put him to sleep because I would try to leave early to get back by 7:30 to put him to bed. Like, just became a thing. And I've always dreamed, when I was a kid, I was around so many divorced engineers. And I was like, I don't want to be that dude. Like, these guys were miserable, miserable people, man. Like, you can't even imagine, like, miserable.
Well, I think people forget that the engineers and the assistants and everything like that, they're there before the artist get in.
And leave and, after the
and
artist.
And leave after. And the next day, and at the end of the day, you're there for as long as the artist wants to be there. If there's a studio I use in London, Red Rooms, and...
Yeah, oh, I've heard of it, actually.
It's great. Maloko Red Rooms. Some of the rooms in there are beautiful. But they might have two sessions a day. And that starts, one starts at 9:30 in the morning and ends at 6 p.m. And then the next one starts at 8 p.m. and goes on till 3 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And they're like, the engineers have to be there the whole time.
Yeah, that's the grind, you know? Like, people just... they don't understand that, man. That nobody does. I mean, we're definitely like the least. I mean, I always knew it was it was that kind of job.
Yeah, of course.
I didn't want to, you know, even just getting into doing a podcast and, you know, speaking at events and stuff. That wasn't what I was striving for when I started. But then I realized people were saying, you're good. You're good at explaining things. And I'm like, really? Because I'm not technical. I'm really not. I just learned from doing and messing up, and then I just found a niche for it. And I, you know, now the engineering world is just much different. There's you know, it's almost like education, you know. Back in the day, those were guarded secrets.
Yeah, of course.
Unless you assisted, and then what happened was you became friends with assistants from other studios, and you'd find out this engineer worked, they'd be like, yo, what does he do on his master bus?
How much
compression is he using? And you would ask these questions, and that just popped into my head. I forgot doing that. Like, you know, there used to be this guy, Andy Wallace. He's still around. He mixed like Nirvana, Nevermind.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the biggest rock records. And I remember the first time I knew someone that met his assistant, because he was like super quiet about his work. And I was like, what does he do? He's like, he mixes everything on the SSL, uses no outboard gear, two delays and an AMS reverb and the SSL compressor. That's his entire mix. And I was like, there's no freaking way. And years later, to this day, if you find things online, that's his technique. It's ear panning, volume, a couple reverbs, one reverb, two delays, and that's the whole mix. And you're just like, oh my god, man. And that's when you realize that you can have all the fanciest gear, but this guy ain't doing nothing,
dude. It's so amazing. And this is like kind of a bit, this is for the musicians' heads out there or the producer heads. Like, there's going to be some people that this conversation is going to go right over their head, which is fine, but there's something about, for me, as I wouldn't call myself, like, I don't know what I'd call myself, because I do a bit of everything, but I'm not a master of any of them, if you know what I mean. And it's like, I've been in the studio with a mix engineer, a guy called Steve Dubs. I don't know if you've heard of him. He does a lot of Moby stuff. He does all of Chemical Brothers kind of records.
And oh, I think you mentioned him a long time ago to me, and I Googled him, and I went down the rabbit hole of finding all this.
Yeah, he's great. He did a record of mine that's not actually out. So he mixed it down, and I was just amazed just in the studio, just watching. I literally just watched him. I didn't really comment on anything. And he had an SSL desk in front of him, and I'm not of the era of desks. Like, I learned on a desk, but I say I learned on a desk. I was probably taught about 3 weeks of how to use a desk, and it was like a digital desk. It wasn't anything special. It was just like, I didn't really know what the fucking hell I was doing.
Yeah.
And still wouldn't. And I'd love to learn, but it's just an art of watching somebody that when you don't have a clue, it's like watching like an amazing pianist. Like, for me, an engineer in the studio that knows exactly what they're doing is just like that. And it's like, how do they know this? This is like, I mean, a secret.
It's also the fact that the engineers are the most comfortable in a studio environment.
Yeah, it's nervous when you're the artist. For me, because I'm like, I should know what he knows or what she knows. And I get nervous being the like artist side, because I'm like, I should know that. Why don't I know that?
Listen, when I was early in my career, man, I'd get nervous every session. Once I started recording, I got really, really nervous before every session, like almost anxiety nervous.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because of the pressure of knowing that their idea that they're trying to put down on tape at the time or a little later Pro Tools is in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of pressure to that.
Yeah.
People don't understand how much pressure it is, because if you're not good and you're not fast enough with punching in and out and things like that, imagine on tape, there's no command Z, motherfucker. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, you erase, you're like, hey, I just cut off this word. Can we just go back a little and fix that word too? And if you're doing that 5 times in a row, the artist is going to be like, yo, you're messing up my flow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of pressure that mounts to sitting in that chair. And they made that clear to me, like, early on. They're like, you think your job is hard? Sit in this chair. You think it's all glamorous? Watch the pressure when all eyes are on you.
Yeah.
You just sit in the corner as an assistant. You're good. If everything's working and everyone's quiet, that's your job.
Yeah, you're done.
Yeah. And there is. That's the pressure, man. But I was like that for years, and now I'm just like, eh. You know, maybe it's age.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wiser now, you know, and a lot of these guys that I'm working with, like, you know, they're in their 20s and I'm, you know, I'm damn near old enough to, well, almost old enough. I don't want to say that. Well,
I think
to be their dad.
I think it's also confidence at the end of the day is that I think life experience just takes you through and you kind of realize that it's not that important.
That happened for me too late in life. It didn't happen for me until Noah.
Okay. That's interesting.
Like, once Noah came in, maybe about a year of getting acclimated to your new life, you know, then I started realizing that my patience for people to engage with, like, people became less. Like, I just try to get your point and move on. And, you know, it's just your patience goes down because you have more patience for your kid. That's where your patience needs to
be. That's just the New York life as well, right?
I mean, not really. I was a real patient guy. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I move fast, but
yeah,
I'm still patient.
No, I think with like the nerves thing for me is just like, I used to get nervous all the time DJing. Like, all the time.
Really? Did like, you were you like Eminem in the bathroom puking like
no,
in 8 Mile?
No, no. I would never show it.
That was after the show.
But then, yeah, I guess it's just doing it over and over again, like very rarely I get nervous now.
Yeah, repetition. You go out. It's like the first time that I used to get really nervous when I had to speak in front of people.
Yeah.
Like, because I thought I was an introvert. Mm. And after a while, man, I don't even prepare when I do, like, you know.
I love that you thought classes. You were an introvert.
I did. I really did for a long time. That was the whole reason I didn't want to become an artist or a DJ. Yeah. I just didn't want to be in front of people.
Mm.
That was really the reason.
Yeah. I get that.
Of course. I just, you know, and now I just have no choice.
Yeah. So I guess.
Sometimes you get paid better to speak than to mix half the time.
That's,
you know?
That's weird.
That's super weird.
Yeah, that is weird.
That's super weird.
How does it work with like paying for people that don't know with like mix downs and things like that? Obviously, do you work on like overall projects or like how does it work? I know how it works, but for people that don't know.
It's a good question. It depends. You know, you'll get the people that call you for singles, right?
Yeah.
Or you'll get the full project. Mm. And the way that I usually do it, because you don't know how long a mix could take. A mix could take anywhere from 4 hours to like a few days, depending on the song. So the way that I do it and the way that I've been doing it is, especially we'll even talk about the independent community, because the major labels is a much different thing. I got to wait 60 to 90 days for payment. I can charge a much higher rate. There's more work that comes with that, because now you got to deliver an exuberant amount of stems and all these passes and high resolution passes.
Stupid.
Yada, yada. But, with independence, I started to treat the independent community more like the major labels, where I would charge a flat rate. Mm. So they're like, okay. And it helped that you have your room, because what happens is I can work whenever I want.
Yeah.
Meaning that, you know, I can work on, I don't know how many mixes a week and just hop around if I want, you know. If I'm bored with this, I go to this. And when I say bored, not that the song's bad, but after a while, you're like, okay, I got to get out of here. So let me go to this world for a bit. And you start moving around. So I usually, the way that I do it is I do like a 7 to 10 day turnaround, mm-hmm. and they get a great rate.
Yeah.
And then I give 2 rounds of revisions, because I feel like with revisions, I'm confident that when I get the rough mix, I can match it and then take it to the next level.
Yeah.
And usually with the changes, there might be like a good engineer, because engineering mixing is not about like making it sound good. It's about making it feel good. Right. Mm. There's a certain emotion in the record that you're trying to convey. Right.
Yeah.
Like that's part of the artist and producer's emotion. So you have to find what that emotion is and enhance that. You know what I mean? And so basically, by the end of the day, first round may be the most changes, and usually it's not a hell of a lot. And depending on the experience of the artist, usually the least experienced artist will send you like a laundry list of notes. And when you end up going through it, you realize that it's really the production, not the mixing, because now they hear their song amplified in a sense, with frequencies not clashing and things, and everything's clear. And you're like, oh, that 808's out of tune, or that kick is out of tune, or the snare is out of tune. You know, you don't realize that, you know, because they're just adding things and don't realize the sound design aspect of it. And then you send that first round, and the second round should be like, okay, this is cool. Can we notch this up one more dB? And then you print and you're done. And that's my process. And what's really cool is I work virtually. So I basically, the way that I do it, and this is my method, is when I send them the mix, usually when I'm done with the mix, I'll hit up the artist and I'll be like, hey, do you want a quick listen before I print? I just want your first initial gut thoughts before I print. So by the time you get it, you've already heard it once.
Yeah.
And you made your quick change. And I'm not talking about sitting there like, let's listen to that chorus 50 times and decide. I'm saying go with your gut, listen to it once or twice, say, oh, vocal could come up. Print. And then they sit with it for a day or two. Then they get back to me and we get on Zoom. And I use this app, this plugin called Audio Movers.
Yeah, it's great.
Which is, it's so great. I mean, you could stream at 32-bit quality at this point, yeah. Wave. And I basically send them everything, the link. We get on Zoom. I share my screen. Like, they can see my entire mix. Mm. They can listen to it with less than a second of lag, depending on the internet. And that's how I've been working. And it's great. It's like if we were mixing right now. And it's amazing. They can be like, hey, what did you do to the kick? Let me see. Can you come down on the Pultec a little bit on the low end? And you're just like, wow, that's kind of fresh. Or if you want, they can take over your screen and do it themselves.
Oh, really?
Yeah, man.
That's amazing. I didn't know you could do that.
So it's like another level to work. And I think it's a great way to work.
Yeah, man. That's interesting. And mm-hmm. you don't have to leave your house.
Nah, bro.
That's amazing. No. How many times do you get really annoying artists, though, that just want changes left, right, and center all the time?
No, actually not. Those are rare.
Really?
Believe it or not, yeah.
Is that because you're working with high-quality artists?
It's not always, you know? Like, it depends what people... I pride myself in speaking with the producer first. Mm. Always. I have to have when a major label sends me a mix, particularly 1A&R and I have at RCA have a really, really dope relationship. Mm. He knows already. Here's the song. I'm going to connect you to such and such.
Yeah.
And I need to have that initial conversation with them because the conversation itself is the vibe. Like you talk to them, you get the vibe, you shoot the shit. You don't even have to talk about music if you don't want. Just get the vibe. And then you say, hey, so what's the direction of this? What do you hear? Where do you think it needs to come up? You know, you have that conversation. Then everyone's at ease, you know? Like, nobody has to get to know each other after I send the mix.
Yeah, totally.
So they already know my intention from the conversation.
That's cool. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. I was speaking to my mastering engineer a couple of weeks ago, and a guy called Andy. He's really great. I don't know if you know him. Andy,
where's he from?
AMPM. His company is called AMPM Mastering.
Oh, I know this. They do like stem mixing, mastering, or something like that.
Yeah, he does. He does some mixing, he does do mixing. He mixed down one of my records that's coming out in a couple of months. And he's really, really talented, but I was talking to him cause I did a mix down for a friend the other day, and it was hard work mixing down cause it wasn't just mixing. It was more everything else.
That's the issue. That's what you guys do, because if you're a producer mindset, man, so your attack is much different than mine. Mm. You know what I mean? And that's good. That's actually good a lot of the times.
Yeah, it was hard. It was hard. You know, when you like, for me, I really wanted to help my mate out, and they are like newer to producing. But they've written this amazing record. The concept of the record was great. And then I didn't want to actually go in and rewrite it. But everything was just like not that well done. And it's not that the vibe was great, but it was more so the like technical side of it. Just none of it worked, because it was what you were saying, just everything added on top. And the minute you kind of put it into a project and kind of let it breathe, there was just too much of everything.
There was no breathing.
Exactly. And then I sent that to the mastering, and they were like, you're like losing everything stereo when it goes into mono. And I was like, I didn't even think of that, because I don't think of that, because when I produce.
Well, also people are adding a lot of wideners and widening things. And what you don't understand, what people really don't grasp, the further you move things out left and right, the less dense your mix sounds, because now you're pushing things. And a lot of times what mastering guys are doing is they tighten up the middle by shelving the lows off the side. So if you had all of this stuff that's living out here, you know, once you start bringing it in, all of a sudden your middle fills up with like the nice. I always tell people, start your mixing with levels and panning. That's it. If you move things around, even by like two or three clicks, that could make the world of a difference to opening something up.
Yeah, because what this person had done, it literally everything, like everything had widener on. And I didn't even think about it until the mastering engineer was like, dude, they've done something to this. And I was like, oh, wow, everything. So like, I then had to go and fix those. So then you're like switching everything from mono and then you're doubling it up and then clicking it left and right so it's not just mono. It was a mess, but eventually got there. And I'm like, I don't want to be a mix engineer ever again after helping one thing out.
But as a mix engineer, you're coming at it from like a neutral ground. You know what I'm saying? It's like such a specific thing why you're coming there. You know what I mean? I had a lot of friends that are producers that have mixed on the side that have a really hard time mixing other people's music.
Yeah, I would love to learn how to.
It's great, man. I encourage everybody who makes music to learn how to speak mix language.
Yeah.
It only helps you. It's going to enhance. When I used to teach, I would tell my students, like, learn. You need to learn how to speak the language because eventually you may not mix, but you may be working with a mixer and you can let them know exactly what you want with less words by knowing how to communicate in the language of mixing, you know? And it's great. And then it also helps them out with sound design. You start learning mixing and you start incorporating these, because really it's basics. You know what I'm saying? Like, I always tell people the basics is what you come down, you end up with. All this fancy schmancy stuff you can add, but if you can get your basics down in your mix from the jump, all the other stuff is what you spend the hours on, not the basics.
Do you know what I really want to do is like I want to like buy a mixer, a proper mixer, and
like an analog one?
Yeah, like an analog one.
You better have that electric the utility money for that, man.
Is it expensive?
I don't even want, like, you want to get an SSL? I mean,
I'd love to get like a small, I don't want to get the like 64 channel.
Oh, you're talking about like AWS 900, the SSL. They have a couple. SSL has some good lines for like I don't know, in the small, 20. You know what's really dope actually is the API, the box.
Yeah, the lunchbox.
No. It's a console.
Oh, really?
Yeah, bro, look it up. API, the box console.
API the box.
Yeah.
Console.
You know who has one? Steve Angelo has one. I've watched a couple videos with it, with that in there. You should look into that because it's got some nice mic pre's that if you have some like synths I see behind your head right there to your over your shoulder, you can throw those into the API pre's, crunch them out, do some gnarly shit with it, you know? And then you have summing on there and bus compression.
See,
and I think it's like $20,000.
I have to save some money for that.
No, I hear you, bro. I'm just giving you. I mean, it still is the cheapest option if you're going into that route.
It's not that expensive. It's $16,000.
So I was off. $16,000. That's what I'm saying. It's really dope. I messed with it at NAMM one year. It's dope. I'm just not. I'm so far removed from analog. Like, I'm trying to become more digital.
So
I'm all digital, bro.
So what's the reasoning behind that?
Easy.
Yeah.
The future. Ease. But ease doesn't mean lazy and like there's no discussion. Plug-in technology has matched analog technology as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's pristine. Also being the dad, you know, like I want to travel, you know. So what I wanted to do was build a badass laptop system that basically lives to my right here.
Yeah.
You know, I could show a little bit. That's my rack. Yeah. So I put it on a hinge dock. I take it right back out. You know what I mean? And I basically, at that point, I have a UAD Apollo. I bring the UAD Apollo. I have this thing here. I'll show you. This is actually a converter. You're going to be like, what? This is actually, you should look into this. It's like $100 and it sounds money.
Is it better than the Apollo converters?
It's different. This is for, this just goes in as USB. It's called the Dragonfly.
Yeah.
And it goes up to 96K.
Damn.
And it's like an audio file, and it's just a headphone jack.
Oh, interesting. Oh, is that if you're on the...
Listen to me. No driver. It automatically gets detected. Like, if you use the output of, like, at a gig or something, and you use this, I've lent this to my boy Sid.
Yeah.
The DJ, he used this a few times. Mm. That's why it looks like this. He's probably going to watch this, so I'm going to show him. Look what you did to my fucking shit, bro. Look at that.
Get him a new one.
Bastard. So, yeah, it's yo, this thing is the bomb, though, man. For traveling, like, you don't have to lug, like, a, you know, one of these big clunky things. So I just have that. I have two satellites from UAD, the travel ones.
Why do you have two?
Huh?
Why do you have two?
Some more power, G. I'm a mix engineer.
You're so badass. You know? You're so
and
badass.
Then I got these head audio headphones that you can kind of see the thing right there. That, and I bring these as like my NS10s, which is literally the setup I have.
Yeah.
It's my NS10s and my head audio.
What's the heads like? I was looking at them.
Yo. Big shout out to Freddie, who owns the company. That's who I got a call. I got a call with him after, but they're dope, man. Like, I met Freddie in 2018 at NAMM, and I got introduced to him. And we've just become friends and have been talking. And finally, like, right when the pandemic hit me, he's like, I'm going to send you a pair of these. And I'm like, what? And I got these, and I've been using them since I'd say April.
Yeah.
And they are absolutely stunning. I can't say anything else. Like, the Type 20s is the ones I have, and they're just like, they're three-way. So they're just sick.
Yeah, because I've always used the Adam A7.
So his father is the one who invented that ribbon tweeter technology.
Okay, I didn't know that it was his dad, because I knew they were kind of like related.
They are related, as related as they come.
I was looking, because I in my studio in Detroit, I have to get a bigger pair of monitors because my room's too big for the speakers.
Oh, Freddie loves electronic. I'll hook you guys up. He's cool.
Yeah, that,
interested, I'll definitely link you.
I was talking to their Instagram person, whoever their Instagram person was, ages ago.
It was probably him. Freddie.
Yeah, it may have been
Freddie Knopp. He's really cool,
because they've done the stack, the like big ass.
I know they have them in Brooklyn. My boy has it in his live room it's called the Bridge Studios. They have it in their live room. Like, if you want to demo them, I haven't heard them yet, but from what I hear, it's
the ones.
Pretty. Yeah.
I was looking at Barefoots, because I think for me, Barefoots for the club side of things, for electronic, they're great. They're like low end is very nice. The heads. Do you do much electronic now?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say my work gets split between electronic and pop.
Okay.
I love mixing pop records.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get it clean, like, baby.
Huh?
Making it clean.
I mean, no, not really. I actually, my mixing style is dirty.
Yeah.
Like, I do, my mixing is, I would say, like, 60% of it or more is analog saturation in the box, but in parallel. So I use like big shout out to Sound Toys Decapitator. I use that parallel mode like all the time. So I'll like turn it down the mix knob. I'll push it till I see the meter hitting, like, let's say minus three. Mm. And then I'll slowly bring it up and I'll switch between, like, you know, all the different, you know, the Ampeg, the EMI, the Neve, all that. And then I find it and I kind of blend it in, and then I can play with it a little bit, like with the fader. And it's, I mean, it's a lot of it is analog saturation, so it's not super clean, you know. But it definitely helps me with electronic music, because what happens is when I get the rough mixes, I think that whole idea that I think in the beginning producers weren't open in electronic music to having their stuff mixed.
Takes the vibe away sometimes.
It absolutely does, and you have to be very careful. Mm. It's actually funny because, you know, that's Justin and I started working with him on his Hello Clouds album, and he ended up finishing it because I didn't do what I actually learned from Justin what not to do, and we're still like very close friends. Mm. Because at the time it was weird. And like, no one knew really. So he sent me his files and I mixed it, not knowing that then when he came to New York, he's like, you know what? I like the way I process the drum group. Can we just import the drum group in there?
Yeah.
And you run it through your master and see what that sounds like, you know? And then I realized, just give me your stuff the way that you hear it.
Yeah.
By the time your faders are at zero, that's your mix. Mm. Now I'm going to go next level.
Yeah.
And that's what I learned, you know? So, but with electronic now, people are more hip to it because they realize, like a few years ago when, you know, Calvin Harris had every hit in the summer, he has an engineer, Zed has an engineer, a guy that works full time, you know, like these guys want to focus on one thing, but there's a certain click that happens with your engineer that after a while you're looking to them like, is that kick right? Like I work with Patlock a lot, right? Me and Patlock have been working together for years on his Kitsune releases.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And we, in the beginning, the first record we did, it was like, you know, he sent me his stuff and whatever. And throughout a few months, we realized like he would start telling me, like, you know, he'd start sending me things ahead of time. What do you think of this kick? You think I need to add another kick? Do you think you can work with this? And we started kind of vibing like that. And then the mixing got so much easier. And that's when they became like 4 or 5 hour mixes or less, because it was like, I kind of like was part of that from the beginning.
Part of the crew. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the fun part.
I think that's the relationship though, isn't it? It's, with Andy that does my mastering, I send it to him and I'm like, I'm not sure about this part of the mix. Can you listen to it and let me know what you think? And he'll come back and be like, yeah, drop out 5K with like 1Q, like by minus 2 dB. And then I'd be like, that's it. That's exactly what I needed. But sometimes I know a lot of people just need that extra pair of ears to just
it takes a village.
Yeah, totally.
It takes a village, man. Everyone, it's like the analogy I use is the reason there's a CEO and a CFO and a COO. Mm. And you know what I'm saying? Like, because the CEO doesn't know accounting as well as the CFO. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's the one thing that I spoke about on the last episode of the podcast with Reset Robot, is that the electronic industry does not understand that, especially the underground. They do not understand that you sometimes need to have the more cooks in the kitchen, the better the food comes out to a certain extent.
And you can benefit greatly from it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not just on the mastering end, because mastering is just going to bring up, you know, I mean, you have an ear, so you don't have issues, but there's people that will be like, I don't understand. Mastering just doesn't sound different than mine, just louder. And I'm like, well they're not there to fix your mix. You know, like, you know, you got to get it mixed and all of that, you know, because sometimes I get records and they'll send me 3 kick drums and I'll drop out one of them. They'll be like, yo, my kick sounds so fat, what did you do to it? And I'm like, well, I dropped that one out and just added a little bit of like R bass, just like literally that's hitting like half a dB. And there it is, there's the weight. And they're like, oh, so I didn't need a third kick drum? And I'm like, no.
Again, it goes back to that thing, is that less is more.
Less is always more, yeah. Man. It's all about the sound design. If you can design your sounds meticulously, that should be the vibe of the record. I'm just enhancing it. I'm just creating, like, the way that I look at it is I'm adding a little bit of height with EQ, a little bit of weight with EQ, and I'm adding the front to back dimensions. So that's sometimes putting like a little amount of reverb here, blending it with another reverb here, maybe putting a delay to splash it out to the left a little bit, like a quick delays. Like, there's so many, like, what I'm doing is I'm like a surgeon trying to get to the heart without touching anything else, right? Like, without, like, cutting an artery by mistake.
Well, that I love that.
A really good thing. I like that.
I like
that.
Oh,
shit. I'm going to use that one day.
I'm going to put that in the description. No, I totally agree, man. And the whole process to me is really fascinating. And I'd love to build a room where I can kind of, like, really home in on that. As well,
get in on that Detroit market, son.
Yeah,
better get a warehouse. That's the way to go.
Yeah, man. They'd be
there's
dope.
A big studio out there.
There's a bunch.
I follow them on Instagram. Royal House, I think it's called. Look them up. I'm pretty sure it's Royal House Recording. They have an SSL. I mean, that's a complex. They have a indoor. They have indoor basketball. It's ridiculous. Look it up.
Royal House Studio, Detroit.
Found it.
Royal House Recording, yeah.
There it is,
Jim. Where is that?
Go meet them. Look at that studio. It might be one of the sickest studios in the country.
It looks very hip-hop. Looks very American.
I don't like studios like that anymore,
no,
Will.
Neither.
Like, honestly, like, I'm trying to get the band. If it once this hopefully once this COVID thing subsides some and people can travel, I want to do an album where we rent a house with the rock band and like do some Red Hot Chili Peppers, Rick Rubin style on Blood Sugar Sex Magic. Just rent a mansion.
So can I, my dream I've set a goal to when I'm 40 to build. Where I live in the UK in Somerset, it's like the middle of nowhere. Like, it's
just, I love that.
It's countrysides. And one of my goals is to buy a plot of land, build a house, and build a studio with a, like, sleeping quarters on. Have like a big live room, have the engineer room, and have like a couple of outhouses so people can stay, like three bedrooms or four bedrooms, whatever, like a nice kitchen, and just allow people to rent it for like a month long.
That's a great idea, because that's I literally was talking about doing that in Woodstock at some point in a few years. Like, I want to do it because Airbnbs are crazy out here now.
Yeah,
and they will be, because people are going to start traveling more. You know,
I just want to be able to. There's. You should check. I don't know. You might know it. Devon Analog Studios in the UK.
Oh, I know them. I follow them on
Instagram.
Wait,
yeah.
Is that the one? No. There's one that they have an SSL that faces a field.
Oh, yeah, that's not Devon.
Delta or starts with a D.
Okay.
I'll send it to you later. You got to see it. It's I mean, it's ridiculous. It's in a farm or something.
Yeah, Devon Analog is in Devon in the UK, and a guy called Tristan that runs it. I need to get him on the podcast. But it's all analog, and it's very electronic driven. Very electronic.
That's dope. See, that to me, if you're going to build a room, for me, you can do it two ways. You can spend all this money on a crazy old console, or you create a badass digital system, and then you get, like, you build out a bunch of lunch boxes and some cool pieces of analog pre's and compressors, and you just get the color, and you have different colors, so you're not tied to like a console.
Here you go. Let me send you this quickly.
Yeah, I want to see this.
I'm gonna text it to you now. Here we go. It's a beautiful studio. There you go. Just text it.
Hold on. I'm looking, right? I'm going to be jealous. Oh, I like the outside already.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Oh my god.
Anybody that's listening, go to Devon_analog_studio.
Oh, sick. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm nerding.
This dude, like, has everything in here. Like,
oh my
everything.
God. Look at this room.
Yeah.
See, that's my vibe.
Yeah.
That's dope.
But yeah, I'd like to have, like, a live room on that as well.
Hold on. I'm following. Boom. Dunzo. Oh, that's so cool.
It's dope, isn't it?
Oh my god.
If anyone just tuned in to the podcast now, it just sounds like this is like a porno, and it's studio porn.
No, it's definitely not. It's studio porn.
But yeah, they use head as well. They have head monitors.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man, they're really good, and because you're out there right now, like, it's they're good people, man. They really are. They're phenomenal, and they like give a shit about mixing. Like, that's the thing. Like, they really do, and they're very accessible, and they're doing very well right now.
Yeah, that stuff does look great.
It looks really good. You probably could demo a pair. I'm sure I can make that happen for you.
Type 20 or the...
Well, it depends what you
30.
Want. You want the bigger ones?
What's the... I want low end.
They have subs now.
Yeah, I don't like working on the subs.
Really?
I always find they're a delay. Always find a delay.
Look, it depends. You should... I'll link you with them.
Yeah, that'd be
great. You can ask him all these questions, because he might tell you that he has... Because they have a plugin that you put on the master that does timed... Is it called time delay? There's like a certain term that they use where they align the speakers.
Yeah.
And they have that. So I don't know if there's some new technology that he did, but the subs just came out.
So is the Type 20?
Type 20 might be too small for you.
Yeah.
Depends what you want.
And the Type 30 is bigger than the Type 20, right?
Oh, fuck yeah. Those are the ones that look like the Atoms, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though they're the OG anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really... I mean, I love these Type 20s. They're stunning.
Oh, man.
They're absolutely stunning.
The thing is, I need to stop looking at it, because I'm like, I haven't played a show in nearly a year and haven't earned money in about a year.
I know. Yeah, I'm starting to see it, man. I'm starting to see, like, some DJ clients of mine are like, anyone recommend good monitors for mixing? I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, motherfuckers ain't... They're not touring.
Literally.
I forgot how easy some people would, like, I always thought, like, you know, all my electronic clients, man, that's the fun part. They, when shows are going, nobody has a problem like paying, you know what I mean? They like, no problem. They're like, oh, I'm doing about 300 shows this year. No worries. You know, you can mix like a few singles. I'm like, great. You know, now nobody's touring and they're like, we don't make money off live stream. You know,
yeah, we make barely any money off streaming.
Yeah, I know that.
It's awful.
I know. It's definitely, but positive, Will. It's all coming back. I heard you on the last podcast. You were being a little neggy about that. We can't have that. Shows are coming back, Will.
Shows are coming back, but it's going to be a while.
I think till it's really back to normal, like 100% for sure. But I don't know about a while.
I think by the end of this year, we'll be back. Definitely.
I don't disagree with you.
Yeah. I think September.
I'm hoping for. So Noah has a normal first grade, because this is, man. It's been remote all week, man. I'm surprised he hasn't ran in here and made a guest appearance, because he usually does. You know what's really dope is they have this program now, 5 years old, man, and they basically learn about sequencing. They learn about like tonalities and stuff,
yeah,
like the spectrograph. They learn about tempo. They basically have like a Fruity Loop sequencer.
No way.
Bro, he calls me in the room yesterday and he's like, Daddy, I made a beat. I'll send you the video later on a side note. You got to see it. It's amazing.
That's
he made
so
like
good.
And it's actually a rhythm. Like, he figured out, like, oh, if I move this, it sounds better. If I put the kick here, it sounds better than here. He's five.
That's amazing.
Bro. Come on, man. I was playing clarinet in fourth grade. You think I was like, you know what I'm saying? And then I switched to saxophone when I realized that it wasn't cool to play the clarinet.
Oh, I love that. Technology, man. That's so good. Dude, we've just done an hour and 25 minutes.
I know. I told you. You got to shut me up.
No, I love it. I could talk all day, but I've actually got to go out quickly.
I know. I got to call in 15 minutes. So
let's wrap this motherfucker up.
Holla.
Dude, thank you so much. Before we go, how can people follow you? How can people, if they want your mixdowns, how can they do all of that?
So I can be reached at. My email is Ariel, A-R-I-E-L, at arielborjo.com. And Instagram, I'm Mixed by Ariel. You could find me on Twitter, and my website is just arielborjo.com. I have like a list of like playlist of my mixes on all the three major platforms. You could check out some of my work, some information. I usually update the blog. Recently, I haven't, some cool new records that just came out. I just worked on Magician's new mixtape that dropped. I mixed two cuts on that.
Sick.
So it's been right. So there's my electronic.
Yeah.
You know, so it's cool, man. But this was a blast, man.
Dude, thank you. Thank you so much.
A good way to wake up with my coffee and Will Clark.
I know, right?
Coffee and Will Clark in the morning. Join us, folks.
That's like a radio show, I think. Dude, I can't wait to hang out with you.
We gotta hit up as soon as everything's over, man. We chilling. I'm definitely gonna visit Detroit at some point,
dude. You come and stay with me, more than welcome,
bro. I'm not kidding you. More don't laugh. I'm definitely taking you on that offer. I'll mix for a roof.
You'll be teaching me.
If I'm coming out there solo, bro, like you might as well use me for something.
You'll be teaching me, dude.
Come on, kiddo.
Keep safe. Say hi to the family, and I'll catch you soon. Keep safe. Love you, dude.
All right, man.
Take care.
Peace.
And that is a wrap. I hope you enjoyed it. I loved it. It was a great conversation. I could have gone on forever. If you enjoyed it, please share with your friends. Hit the like button. Give us a little review. And have a great week. Keep safe.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.